Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The World of Percy Jackson. In this episode, we're going to read chapters 15 and 16. Now, in the last episode, we read chapters 13 and 14, and the trio of Frank, Hazel, and Percy were brought to discuss about their quest in traveling to Alaska. The meeting mostly went over questions like what supplies are they getting, and with Octavian, with his perseverance in asking the question, do you have a plan? Octavian, throughout the entire meeting, manipulates members of the Senate in order to trick them into barely giving resources for the trio except the access to a boating dock. Yeah, Octavian being real gracious with a boating dock. Afterwards, Octavian tells Percy that Reyna wishes to meet him and attempts to foreshadow the fact that the last person Reyna met was Jason, who has supposedly disappeared from camp. We will now read chapter 15 to see how exactly will this discussion take Percy and whether Octavian was just making up a lot of lies, or we'll just have to see how this goes. Chapter 15, Percy. Percy was glad Riptide had returned to his pocket. Judging from Reyna's expression, he thought he might need to defend himself. She stormed into the Principia with her purple cloak billowing and her greyhounds at her feet. Percy was sitting in one of the praetor chairs that he'd pulled to the visitor's side, which maybe wasn't the proper thing to do. He started to get up. "Stay seated," Reyna growled. "You leave after lunch. We have a lot to discuss." She plunked down her dagger so hard the jellybean bowl rattled. Aram and Argentum took their posts on her left and right and fixed their ruby eyes on Percy. "What did I do wrong?" Percy asked. "If it's about the chair, it's not you," Reyna scowled. "I hate Senate meetings. When Octavian gets talking..." Percy nodded. "You're a warrior. Octavian is a talker. Put him in front of the Senate and suddenly he becomes the powerful one." She narrowed her eyes. "You're smarter than you look." "Gee, thanks. I hear Octavian might get elected praetor, assuming the camp survives that long." "Which brings us to the subject of Doomsday," Reyna said, "and how you might help prevent it. But before I place the fate of Camp Jupiter in your hands, we need to get a few things straight." She sat down and put a ring on the table, a band of silver etched with a sword and torch design, like Reyna's tattoo. "Do you know what this is?" "The sign of your mom," Percy said. "The, war goddess." He tried to remember the name, but he didn't want to get it wrong. "Something like Bologna? Bologna? Or salami?" "Bologna, yes." Reyna scrutinized him carefully. "You don't remember where you saw this ring before. You really don't remember me or my sister Hilla?" Percy shook his head. "I'm sorry. It would have been 4 years ago, just before you came to camp." Reyna frowned. "How did you..." "You've got four stripes on your tattoo. 4 years?" Reyna looked at her forearm. "Of course, it seems so long ago. I suppose you wouldn't recall me even if you had your memory. I was just a little girl. One attendant among so many at the spa. But you spoke with my sister just before you and that other one, Annabeth, destroyed our home." Percy tried to remember. He really did. For some reason, Annabeth and he had visited a spa and decided to destroy it. He couldn't imagine why. Maybe they hadn't liked the deep tissue massage. Maybe they'd gotten bad manicures. "It's a blank," he said. "Since your dogs aren't attacking me, I hope you'll believe me. I'm telling the truth." Aram and Argentum snarled. Percy got the feeling that they were thinking, "Please lie. Please lie." Reyna tapped the silver ring. "I believe you're sincere," she said, "but not everyone at camp does. Octavian thinks you're a spy. He thinks you were sent here by Gaia to find our weaknesses and distract us. He believes the old legends about the Greeks." "Old legends?" Reyna's hand rested halfway between her dagger and the jelly beans. Percy had a feeling that if she made a sudden move, she wouldn't be grabbing for the candy. "Some believe Greek demigods still exist," she said. "Heroes who follow the older forms of the gods. There are legends of battles between Roman and Greek heroes in relatively modern times. The American Civil War, for instance. I have no proof of this, and if our layers know anything, they refuse to say. But Octavian believes the Greeks are still around, plotting our downfall. working with the forces of Gaia. He thinks you are one of them. Is that what you believe? I believe you came from somewhere, she said. You're important and dangerous. Two gods have taken a special interest in you since you arrived, so I can't believe you'd work against Olympus. Or Rome. She shrugged. Of course, I could be wrong. Perhaps the gods send you here to test my judgment. But I think you were sent here to make up for the loss of Jason. Jason. Percy couldn't go very far in this camp without hearing that name. The way you talk about him, Percy said. Were you two a couple? Reyna's eyes bored into him, like the eyes of a hungry wolf. Percy had seen enough hungry wolves to know. We might have been, Reyna said, given time. Praetors work closely together. It's common for them to become romantically involved, but Jason was only Praetor for a few months before he disappeared. Ever since then, Octavian has been pestering me, agitating for new elections. I've resisted. I need a partner in power, but I prefer someone like Jason, a warrior, not a schemer. She waited. Percy realized she was sending him a silent invitation. His throat went dry. Oh, you mean... Oh. I believe the gods sent you to help me, Reyna said. I don't understand where you come from, any more than I understood it 4 years ago. But I think your arrival is some sort of repayment. You destroyed my home once, now you've been sent to save my home. I don't hold a grudge against you for the past, Percy. My sister hates you still, it's true. But fate brought me here to Camp Jupiter. I've done well. All I ask you is that you work with me for the future. I intend to save this camp. The metal dogs glared at him, their mouths frozen in snarl mode. Percy found Reyna's eyes a lot harder to meet. Look, I'll help, he promised. But I'm new here. You've got a lot of good people who know this camp better than I do. If we succeed on this quest, Hazel and Franken will be heroes. You could ask one of them, please, Reyna said. No one will follow a child of Pluto. There's something about that girl. Rumors about where she came from. No, she won't do. As for Frank Zhang, he has a good heart, but he's hopelessly naive and inexperienced. Besides, if the others found out about his family history at this camp... Family history? The point is, Percy, you are the real power on this quest. You are a seasoned veteran. I've seen what you can do. A son of Neptune wouldn't be my first choice, but if you return successfully from this mission, the Legion might be saved. The Praetorship will be yours for the taking. Together, you and I could expand the power of Rome. We could raise an army and find the doors of death. Crush Gaia's forces once and for all. You'd find me a very helpful friend. She said that word like it could have had several meanings, and he could pick which one. Percy's feet started tapping on the floor, anxious to run. Reyna, I'm honored and all, seriously. But I've got a girlfriend, and I don't want power or a praetorship. Percy was afraid he'd make her mad. Instead, she just raised her eyebrows. A man who turns down power? She said. That's not very Roman of you. Just think about it. In 4 days, I have to make a choice. If we are to fight off an invasion, we must have two strong praetors. I prefer you, but if you fail on your quest, or don't come back... Or refuse my offer. Well, I'll work with Octavian. I mean to save this camp, Percy Jackson. Things are worse than you realize. Percy remembered what Frank said about the monster attacks getting more frequent. How bad? Reyna's nails dug into the table. Even the Senate doesn't know the whole truth. I've asked Octavian not to share his auguries or we'd have mass panic. He's seen a great army marching south, more than we can possibly defeat. They're led by a giant... Alcyoneus? I don't think so. If he is truly invulnerable in Alaska, he'd be foolish to come here himself. It must be one of his brothers. Great, Percy said. So we've got two giants to worry about. The praetor nodded. Lupo and her wolves are trying to slow them down, but this force is too strong even for them. The enemy will be here soon, but the Feast of Fortuna at the very latest. Percy shuddered. He'd seen Lupo in action. He knew all about the wolf goddess and her pack. If this enemy was too powerful for Lupa, Camp Jupiter didn't stand a chance. Reyna read his expression. Yes, it's bad. but it's not hopeless. If you succeed in bringing back our eagle, if you release death so we can actually kill our enemies, then we stand a chance. And there's one more possibility. Raina slid the silver ring across the table. I can't give you much help, but your journey will take you close to Seattle. I'm asking you for a favor, which may also help you. Find my sister Hilla.
Your sister?
The one who hates me.
Oh, yes.
Raina agreed. She would love to kill you, but show her that ring as a token for me, and she may help you instead.
May?
I can't speak for her. In fact, Raina frowned. In fact, I haven't spoken to her in weeks. She's gone silent with these armies passing through.
You want me to check on her? Percy guessed. Make sure she's okay.
Partially, yes. I can't imagine she's been overcome. My sister has a powerful force. Her territory is well defended, but if you can find her, she could offer you valuable help. It could mean the difference between success and failure on your quest. And if you tell her what's happening here,
she might send help? Percy asked.
Raina didn't answer, but Percy could see the desperation in her eyes. She was terrified, grasping for anything that could save her camp. No wonder she wanted Percy's help. She was the only praetor. The defense of the camp rested on her shoulders alone. Percy took the ring. I'll find her. Where do I have to look? What kind of force does she have? Don't worry. Just go to Seattle. They'll find you.
That didn't sound encouraging, but Percy slipped the ring into his leather necklace with his beads and his probation tablet.
Wish me luck.
Fight well, Percy Jackson, Raina said.
And thank you.
He could tell the audience was over. Raina was having trouble holding herself together, keeping up the image of the confident commander. She needed some time by herself.
But at the door of the Principia, Percy couldn't resist turning.
How did we destroy your home? The spa where you lived?
The metal greyhounds growled. Raina snapped her fingers to silence them.
You destroyed the power of our mistress, she said. You freed some prisoners who took revenge on all of us who lived on the islands.
My sister and I, well, we survived. It was difficult, but in the long run, I think we are better off from that place.
Still, I'm sorry, Percy said. If I hurt you, I'm sorry.
Raina gazed at him for a long time, as if trying to translate his words.
An apology? Not very Roman at all, Percy Jackson.
You'd make an interesting praetor. I hope you think about my offer.
And that's the end of chapter 16. This was definitely a more fascinating chapter than just seeing Octavian, you know, nitpick at every single decision that the Senate makes. Because this is more, I feel like, a more heartfelt conversation with you know, Raina offering the position of praetor. And I think we can see the correlation here, even though that Percy has lost his memories, that he's like okay with the small things, you know. He's okay, he's like happy when he's with his family, friends, all of that. But you know, when we read the last series, we remember how when Percy was offered after the Titan War, Percy was offered a spot to become a god, but he refused to do so because he really wanted to be with his friends. You know, if you're a god, not usually you're able to meet up with your friends as often as you could as a normal human being. So he turned that down. And this time, it seems that he may turn it down one more time, but instead for the title of praetor, which is probably one of the most influential positions in Camp Jupiter. But still, I think that Percy is more inclined towards enjoying the smaller stuff in life than compared to having just power and all of that. So after the break, we'll read chapter 16, Percy.
And we're back from the ads, and now we're going to read chapter 16, Percy. Lunch felt like a funeral party. Everybody ate. People talked in hushed tones. Nobody seemed particularly happy. The other campers kept glancing over at Percy like he was the corpse of honor. Raina made a brief speech wishing them luck. Octavian ripped open a Beanie Baby and pronounced grave omens and hard times ahead, but predicted the camp would be saved by an unexpected hero,
whose initials were probably Octavian. Then the other campers went off to their afternoon classes. Gladiator fighting, Latin lessons, paintball with ghosts, eagle training, and a dozen other activities that sounded better than a suicide quest. Percy followed Hazel and Frank to the barracks to pack. Percy didn't have much. He cleaned up his backpack from his trip south and had kept most of his bargain bar supplies. He had a fresh pair of jeans and an extra purple t-shirt from the camp quartermaster, plus some nectar, ambrosia, snacks, little mortal money, and camping supplies. At lunch, Reyna had handed him a scroll of introduction from the Praetor and Camp Senate. Supposedly, any retired legionnaires they met on the trip would help them if shown the letter. He also kept his leather necklace with the beads, the silver ring, and the probatio tablet. And of course, he had Riptide in his pocket. He folded his tattered orange t-shirt and left it on his bunk. "I'll be back," he said. He felt pretty stupid talking to a t-shirt, but he was really thinking about Vanabeth and his old life. "I'm not leaving for good, but I have to help these guys. They took me in. They deserve to survive." The t-shirt didn't answer, thankfully. One of the roommates, Bobby, gave them a ride to the border of the valley on Hannibal the Elephant. From the hilltops, Percy could see everything below. The little Tiber snaked across golden pastures where the unicorns were grazing. The temples and forums of New Rome gleamed in the sunlight. On the field of Mars, engineers were hard at work, pulling down the remains of last night's fort and setting up barricades for a game of death ball. A normal day for Camp Jupiter, but on the northern horizon, storm clouds were gathering. Shadows moved across the hills, and Percy imagined the face of Gaia getting closer and closer. "Work with me for the future," Reyna had said. "I intend to save this camp." Looking down at the valley, Percy understood why she cared so much. Even though he was new to Camp Jupiter, he felt a fierce desire to protect this place. A safe haven, where demigods could build their lives. He wanted that to be part of his future. Maybe not the way Reyna imagined, but if he could share this place with Annabeth. They got off the elephant. Bobby wished them a safe journey. Hannibal wrapped the three questers with his trunk. Then the elephant taxi service headed back into the valley. Percy sighed. He turned to Hazel and Frank and tried to think of something upbeat to say. A familiar voice said, "IDs, please." A statue of Terminus appeared at the summit of the hill. The god's marble face frowned irritably. "Well, come along." "You again?" Percy asked. "I thought you just guarded the city." Terminus huffed. "Glad to see you too, Mr. Rule Flouter. Normally, yes, I guard the city, but for international departures, I like to provide extra security at the camp borders." "You really should have allowed 2 hours before your planned departure time, you know. But we'll have to make do. Now come over here so I can pat you down." "But you don't have—" Percy stopped himself. Sure. He stood next to the armless statue. Terminus conducted a realist mental pat-down. "You seem to be clean," Terminus decided. "Do you have anything to declare?" "Yes," Percy said. "I declare this is stupid." "Probatio tablet, Percy Jackson, 5th cohort, son of Neptune?" "Fine, go." "Hazel Levesque, daughter of Pluto?" "Fine." "Any foreign currency or, precious metals to declare?" "No," she muttered. "Are you sure?" Terminus asked. "Because last time, no." "Well, this is a grumpy bunch," said the god. "Quest traveler is always in a rush. Now let's see. Frank Zhang." "Ah, Centurion. Well done, Frank. And that haircut is regulation perfect. I approve." "Off you go then, Centurion Zhang. Do you need any directions today?" "No. No, I guess not." "Just down to the BART station," Terminus said anyway. "Change trains at 12th Street in Oakland. You want Fruitvale Station. From there, you can walk or take the bus to Alameda. "You guys don't have a magical BART train or something?" Percy asked. "Magic trains!" Terminus scoffed. "You'll be wanting your own security lane and a pass to the executive lounge next. Just travel safety and watch out for polyboats." Talk about scoff laws. "Bah! I wish I could throttle them with my bare hands." "Wait, who?" Percy asked. Terminus made a straining expression like he was flexing his non-existent biceps. "Ah, well, just be careful of him. I imagine he can smell a son of Neptune a mile away. Out you go now. Good luck." An invisible force kicked them across the boundary. When Percy looked back, Terminus was gone. In fact, the entire valley was gone. The Berkeley Hills seemed to be free of any Roman camp. Percy looked at his friends. Any idea what Terminus was talking about? Watch out for political something or other? Paul-po-lib-a-tees. Hazel has sounded out the name carefully. Never heard of him. Sounds Greek, Frank said. That narrows it down, Percy sighed. Well, we probably just appeared on the smell radar for every monster within 5 miles. We'd better get moving. It took them 2 hours to reach the docks in Alameda. Compared to Percy's last few months, the trip was easy. No monsters attacked. Nobody looked at Percy like he was a homeless wild child. Frank had stored his spear, bow, and quiver in a long bag made for skis. Hazel's cavalry sword was wrapped in a bedroll slung on her back. Together, the three of them looked like normal high schoolers on their way to an overnight trip. They walked to Rockridge Station, bought their tickets with mortal money, and hopped on the BART train. They got off in Oakland. They had to walk through some rough neighborhoods, but nobody bothered them. Whenever the local gang members came close enough to look in Percy's eyes, they quickly veered away. He perfected his wolf stare over the last few months. A look that said, "However bad you think you are, I'm worse." After strangling sea monsters and running over gorgons in a police car, Percy wasn't scared of gangs. Pretty much nothing in the mortal world scared him anymore. In the late afternoon, they made it to the Alameda docks. Percy looked out over San Francisco Bay and breathed in the salty sea air. Immediately, he felt better. This was his father's domain. Whatever they faced, he'd have the upper hand as long as they were at sea. Dozens of boats were moored at the docks, everything from 50-foot yachts to 10-foot fishing boats. He scanned the slips for some sort of magic vessel. A trireme, maybe? Or a dragon-headed warship like he'd seen in his dreams? You guys know what we're looking for? Hazel and Frank shook their heads. I didn't even know we had a navy. Hazel sounded as if she wished there wasn't one. Oh, Frank pointed. You don't think... At the end of the dock was a tiny boat, like a dinghy, covered in a purple tarp. Embroidered in faded gold along the canvas was SPQR. Percy's confidence wavered. No way. He uncovered the boat, his hands working the knots like he'd been doing it his whole life. Under the tarp was an old steel rowboat with no oars. The boat had been painted dark blue at one point, but the hull was so crusted with tar and salt, it looked like one massive nautical bruise. On the bow, the name Pax was still readable, lettered in gold. Painted eyes drooped sadly at the water levels, as if the boat were about to fall asleep. On board were two benches, some steel wool, an old cooler, and a mound of frayed rope with one end tied to the mooring. At the bottom of the boat, a plastic bag and two empty Coke cans floated in several inches of scummy water. Behold, Frank said, the mighty Roman Navy. There's got to be a mistake, Hazel said. This is a piece of junk. Percy imagined Octavian laughing at them, but he decided not to let it get him down. The Pax was still a boat. He jumped aboard and the hull hummed under his feet, responding to his presence. He gathered up the garbage in the cooler and put it on the dock. He willed the scummy water to flow over the sides and out of the boat. Then he pointed at the steel wool and it flew across the floor, scrubbing and polishing so fast the steel began to smoke. When it was done, the boat was clean. Percy pointed at the rope and it had tied itself from the dock. No oars, but that didn't matter. Percy could tell that the boat was ready to move, just awaiting his command. This'll do, he said. Hop in. Hazel and Frank looked a little stunned, but they climbed aboard. Hazel seemed especially nervous. When it settled on the seats, Percy concentrated and the boat slipped away from the dock. Juno was right, you know, the sleepy voice of Gaia whispered in Percy's mind, startling him so bad the boat rocked. You could have chosen a new life in the sea. You would have been safe from me there. Now it's too late. You chose pain and misery. You're part of my plan now, my important little pawn. Get off my ship, Percy growled. What? Frank asked. Percy waited, but the voice of Gaia was silent. Nothing, he said. Let's see what this rowboat can do. He turned the boat to the north, and in no time, They were speeding along at 15 knots, heading for the Golden Gate Bridge. And that's the end of chapter 16. Those two chapters were definitely some of the more interesting ones, because we finally got to see, you know, Percy get more at ease. I don't think I can say the same for Hazel. She already seems a bit uncomfortable with being on the boat, but hopefully she's distracted from that. But yeah, I think, you know, Percy's really enjoying it. And even though, again, they don't have any oars, that's okay. Because, you know, Percy's dad is Poseidon / Neptune. And he basically controls the sea. So I think it's pretty easy for Percy. He could even swim. He'd probably get a dolphin tail just to, like, help him with swimming. So I think he really is, like, connected to the ocean and really... It's kind of like a stress reliever for him. And, you know, just because there aren't any oars or anything like that on the boat, that doesn't mean it's still, like, horrible. So I think that even though they may have not the best boat, it's still a boat. And I think it might be a crucial thing to helping them get to Alaska and essentially succeed with the quest. So next week, we'll read chapters 17 and 18 and see how exactly... Are they actually going to face any monsters in the sea? Because we did hear in the end of the chapter how Gaia started warning Percy and now said that basically that the ocean isn't safe anymore either. So we'll have to see if, you know, Percy and the trio... Percy, Frank, and Hazel, you know, face any sea monsters. And if they are... we'll have to see how they battle against them. So next week, we'll read chapters 16 and 17 and 18. And until next week, stay safe and stay out of boredom.